step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Grind Collective. It's our third episode. We're going to be discussing the World Baseball Classic in pretty great detail, and we're just going to go through it. As well as just kind of our general experiences in the world of baseball that we live in and somewhat work in, or play in one instance. Joining my left is Daniel Garcia. He is a contributor for Prospects Live on our draft team, and he is one of the analysts on the University of Virginia Cavaliers baseball team. And also joined at my right, y'all are both at my right, Johnny Davis, right-handed pitcher for the Assumption College Greyhounds, and he is also a contributor at Prospects Live and will be a pitching coach for Hyannis this summer as a member of the Hyannis Harbor Hawks. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, boys.
How you doing, Will?
It's great. I've been great for a while now. All right, so before we get into discussing the World Baseball Classic, college baseball has been going on for a few weeks now, but in earnest, we're starting the conference schedules for a lot of teams across the country. So I wanted to throw it around to you guys. What matchups were you looking forward to the most? And I'm going to start with Danny. You're going to be at Charlottesville a lot. Teams coming to Charlottesville that you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah. First and foremost, with conference play, I'm actually most excited to see the UVA guys I've been watching. I've seen them play a lot of out-of-conference games. I want to see some guys who see what they carry through when maybe we start facing some better pitching, especially some of the draft-eligible guys like Kyle Teal, Ethan O'Donnell, I'm a huge fan of. I've been a huge fan of for a while. Jake Elhoff, just to name a few. But then a team I'm excited about to see is Miami. They have some big draft eligible guys too, Yohandy Morales being one. And I'm excited to see Gage Zeal on the mound too. He'll be a good test for our lineup. It'll be a good test for him too, facing one of the best offenses in the country.
All right, I'll throw it over to you, Johnny. Actually, what I want to know from you is what opponent in the Northeastern 10 are you looking most forward to playing against? Is there any school that Assumption circles on the calendar and is like, you know, this is the big one, you know, this is the one we're going to show what we got?
Yeah, so we have two teams on our side of the conference who are perennially the top two who we always look to have really good series and really good games against, and that's Southern New Hampshire and Franklin Pierce. I'd say our rivals are kind of Bentley University, which is about 45 minutes into Boston. But we're really close with them. I mean, we play them so much, and we have fall scrimmages against them. We got a lot of people from each team know each other, and so that's always a great game just because you're playing against people you know. But I'd say that with a lot of the guys here, a lot of the fifth years, and how small our kind of pod is on our side of the conference, like, okay, we played these guys so many times. So, we it's not like we circle the opponent. It's like we circle the arm we want to see. So it's like, Kyle Roach, the big arm over at Franklin Pierce, like, okay, we can't wait till we see Roach, or we can't wait till we see another guy from Southern New Hampshire. That's kind of That's kind of our thing. So we just finished up our Florida trip and our North Carolina trip as well. And that was a great test for us. I mean, I don't think we played exactly, you know, how we wanted. I don't think our record right now is where we want it to be. But I do think that now we're kind of like, okay, we were punched in the nose against teams like Florida Southern, against Rollins, these, you know, nationally ranked programs. Like, now we're back up north. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can go on a run. And, you know, that's kind of where we're at. So.
All right. I'll wrap it up here. Since they mentioned ACC play, I'm going to mention an SEC matchup that I'm really looking forward to. Georgia's got a lot of great teams coming in through Athens. But I think the one I'm looking forward to the most is Tennessee. Tennessee is going to come to Athens in the beginning of May. I have it circled on my calendar. Chase Dylander, Chase Burns. There might even be more people named Chase that I haven't even heard of yet that are coming in. Malia Huna, Jared Dickey, just talent up and down that team, and particularly with arms. And I'm just really looking forward to that. It felt like last year a lot of the great matchups came in through Tech. And this year, I mean, Georgia's got a laundry list of great teams coming in, and in the final weeks of the season, Arkansas, LSU, but Tennessee, just, you know, it's Tennessee. They also play with just an incredible amount of swagger and confidence, and that Georgia crowd is going to let them have it as well. So it's going to be a really fun atmosphere, I think. Which is just something I never really thought of that much until this year. But just the atmosphere of this really big team coming to town, and you're going to get, like, you know, loud, and you're going to try to intimidate them. It adds a whole new element that just kind of raises your adrenaline a little bit.
Well, I'm going to piggyback off what Danny was saying. I'm really excited about Gage Zeal as a prospect at Miami. In my entire college database, he had his sweeping slider was at the top in terms of pitch quality and pitch grade, which he was getting up to 87, 88 with, you know, plus 15 inches of horizontals. I think that's a pitch that's incredibly rare, even at the MLB level. And to see that over the summer, that's something where, like, I'm really excited to kind of see what he does. Alejandro Rosario was a kid that I had the opportunity to work with over the summer. Could get up to 97, 98 with kind of a nice little split change and a little sweep slider too. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how they do when they get to play, get deeper into the ACC schedule.
Yeah, and before, and we're really in the World Baseball class, but one thing that was brought to my attention that we wanted to talk about. The World Baseball Classic has got the Fox analyst, and John Smoltz, about any time he says something in a microphone, Twitter goes up and is, you know, this is what's wrong with this is what's wrong with that. So I wanted to kind of, using Smoltzy as a bit of an example, what are you looking for out of a color analyst for yourself when you're watching baseball? Because we all watch it at different levels. I think MLB is always going to cater to the casual fan, but what are you as a much more, you know, dedicated fan, hardcore fan even, what are you looking for out of a color analyst to add to the proceedings? Start with you.
I watch a lot of Cubs games, and I think they have one of the better booths in baseball with Jim Deshaies and Boog Shambi. I think that's how you say his last name. And I think they do what I look for in a really good pair. You have JD, who has the experience of a ball player, right? He can go on and share some cool stories from an older generation of players. And that really fills in when you're watching 100 games a season. That fills in a lot of the dead time. And you just learn about the history of the sport. History of the sport's been always really interesting to me. So I love having a commentator who can fill that in. And Smoltz does have that ability. To be that guy, right? To be the one who talks about baseball, his experiences within it. But then I think you need someone like Boog, who is well versed in the new statistics that are throughout baseball. And Boog really fills in the gaps a lot of times. And he doesn't start going into crazy like things, but like they will bring Lance Brozdowski onto the broadcast every now and then, because he's with Marquee. And Boog will be the one leading that conversation most of the time. I think it's you have to find that balance between having a player who can talk about his experiences with the game, who can talk about what the players on the field are probably experiencing, and then that guy who's filling in with these are the stats that people are caring about now. This is how the teams are leveraging them.
Yep. To elaborate on that, Steve Deshays, former Major League Ball player, and then you got Lance Bradowski, who is an analyst, worked for Driveline. Yep. Came into Marquise kind of to add that data perspective. So I guess like what you're getting at, you know, you want that player to tell you about the experience of what the players are going through, what mm-hmm. they see, how they're, you know, reacting on the field, have like that kind of instinct that you get yep. as a high level player, combined with that very well-versed data side. And just, you know, obviously, of course, you want those two people to work together and play off each other and, you know, mm-hmm. enhance, you know, their feel for the game. So I just wanted to clarify with Lance, because you just kind of brought his name. I don't know if everybody knows who Lance is.
Yeah.
But I'll throw it over to you, Johnny. It doesn't have to be a local broadcast that for point of reference, but what do you just generally look for when you're watching a baseball game? What do you like to hear from, well, let's just say from the booth in general?
Yeah, I mean, like you guys know, on a personal note, I spent a long time away from the game with Tom John surgery, and you know, you can kind of get so geared towards data, and for me, it was like, okay, write code and working on modeling and stuff, and you get so averse into that side of the game. And for me, it was like when I got back into pitching and like having to make pitches and having to, you know, work on, you know, holding runners and stuff. It's a completely different thing in my eyes. And it's almost like for me, like when I was listening to Schmoltz last night, you know, talk about slowing down the game and, you know, kind of the lessons he learned from Glavin and Maddux about not showing, you know, when you know you're in a tough spot. That was something where it's like I could empathize with, but, you know, it's like for the, you know, for on the data side, it's like that's something where I'm not really thinking about that. And so I do appreciate that. And I'm not here to completely tarnish everything that, you know, and Schmoltz says a lot of really unintelligent things when it comes to data. But I will say that I do appreciate that stuff. So, you know, I like kind of where Danny's headed. You know, I know Lance, he's a very, very knowledgeable guy. And I think that incorporating that sort of like young flavor to a broadcast with an older guy who has more experience in the game, I think that's probably the best way to do it. And you know, it's like there's kind of a misconception that as you get older, you kind of need to be okay, completely wrapped up in the old school way of mind. This past summer, I worked with Kevin Holm, who was a former big leaguer with the Cardinals as our pitching coach, and he loved some of the newer stuff, but it just had never been explained in a way that, like, well, he was like, okay, we were saying the same stuff. He was just saying it in an old school fashion. I was saying it in a new school fashion. And it made complete sense when we were able to break it down. And he could explain stuff to me and I could explain stuff to him. We had this kind of synergy that worked great. And I think that kind of should be the goal, is to find that blend between old school and new school.
Yeah, I'll just wrap up by saying something that I think is somewhat – on, I think, kind of the minds of everyone when they watch, but doesn't really articulate it. Is somebody that watches the game on a level and tries to understand as much as what's going on around it. I love former players coming in and explaining, you know, mechanics, because that's just not something I'm familiar with. And I feel like I learn a lot more. Like, I remember watching a game where Mike Soroka was a guest commentator, and he said something that stuck with me, and it made so much sense at the time, and it was like, how did I not think about that before? Somebody fouled a fastball right back, like off the barrel of the bat, just up, back to the net. And he said, can't go to that pitch again. He's on it. Got to go to the breaking ball. I was like, of course. It makes so much sense. Like, he's just this close to barreling up that pitch. You need to mix it up now. You can't go back to that pitch. Or if you are going to go up to that back to that pitch, you need to set up in a way where you can't get the barrel to it. And just having that former player aspect of it always helped. But in general, just watching the game, I just want two guys that have good chemistry together and are having fun watching the game. Like, that's a huge thing for me. It's just, it's never a pleasant experience when you're watching two people that don't want to be there. Or you're listening to two people that don't want to be there. Especially, Jamie brought up, you have those big, long, 10-2 games where the home team's down. You're just trying to think of things to say without saying anything that begins with four letters. You know, like, I don't know, it would have four letters. I don't know if I said begin with four letters. I guess you could add adjectives to the four-letter word, or like suffixes. Regardless, you just want people there that are enjoying themselves and are enjoying the game for what it is. And it's so infectious. It really is. So I just having fun, I think, is another crucial element to it. So I'm going to throw it now to does anybody else have anything else they want to add?
Just with you saying, like, having fun, like, I feel like a lot of times some of those older announcers, you kind of hear their agitation with the current state of the game, and they'll spend the whole 3-hour broadcast kind of talking about, well, in older generations, it was better because of X, Y, Z, and going on rants about the newer games. I just want someone who's going to be able to market the game of baseball well, someone who's enjoying sitting there and watching it. You want to be sitting there watching someone who actually loves the game, right? That's how you pass on the love, is you go and watch someone who's enthusiastic about it. You don't see someone who's just going to rant about the game and kind of – that turns you away. That makes me turn the broadcast on mute every now and then.
Yeah, definitely. So with that being said, we're going to get into our main topic now, the World Baseball Classic. It's an event that's been around now for the better part of a decade. I think it started in 2006. First, the champions were Japan. Your defending champions are our beloved – USA baseball. And I wanted to kind of ask you guys, what have you noticed this year in the World Baseball Classic that gives it a different feel, different vibe than previous iterations?
Yeah, I think for this year, there's been a lot to do about how the US's pitching isn't very strong. And that's been like a kind of big storyline. And it creates a lot of like, how we view it versus everyone else, which I'm sure we'll get into. But so to me, that's been the kind of what's been hanging over this World Baseball Classic. And you start seeing some people commenting on like, why should it exist? But like, I think it's great for most countries and they love it. Compared to the other ones, that's really been the big comparison to me that stood out. I do think that this is the first time where they're really, really a lot of really, really stacked teams. Like, I know USA has always been good. Japan's been good. But, like, now you see Venezuela's roster is, like, completely stacked. Their lineup, they just crushed Dominican Republic, who has one of the best collections of athletes ever in a lineup. But so I think there's the level of play is increasing. I think it's increasing for all teams. So that's been a nice surprise. But just like I said, the big storyline about pitching right now.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I observed that I think is different is just kind of the palpable excitement, especially across, different nations. It's kind of hard to gauge, for me, how excited the U.S. gets about it on a yearly basis. And I think there's contributing factors that we can talk about that limit how invested you can get into it on the U.S. side. But you see, like, these teams like Great Britain that, like, these are just really, if we're being honest, there's some of these teams that are just a collection of guys. They're not nationals of these nations, but they've banded together around that nation and it kind of formed, like an identity, the tea sipping for extra base hits, as a celebration. Just stuck out to me as just kind of like there's definitely a sense of pride across all these teams that, it's always been there in some nations, but now it feels like it's there in almost all of them. And that really kind of elevates it.
I think a good example in previous years, and it's still there, is Team Italy has always been one of those scrappy teams that's like, it's just a collection of guys that may not be nationals, like, but they have so much pride to be on that team. And that's carried through with this team too. But now, and that's been multiple World Baseball Classics because Anthony Rizzo was playing on them a few years ago and they were playing well. And that's carried through to this year. But now, like you said, it's Great Britain's having that with their home run celebration, right? They're putting that cap and the crown and the robe on the hitters, and they're really leaning into their national pride. And I think that's going to do a good job marketing the game in those markets and maybe growing the games there too. Just that sense of national pride, or seeing people, the teams like Czech Republic, where there's storylines of just guys who are like high school teachers pitching or engineers, and they're just showing up for countries and winning games for countries that you may have not expected. I think it's really cool to see these countries banding around. And just when you see the games that are in different countries too, right? The crowds in those stadiums are crazy, go crazy. One of the coolest things I saw was when Japan was playing. First of all, the Japanese crowds go crazy, and I love the energy they bring. But when Shohei Ohtani was batting, you could hear a pin drop. And then when he hits a home run, the crowd erupts like things you don't see here. And it's just, I love seeing all these different cultures at play. And like you said, now I think it's every single team is like that, where it used to be the top teams were just like that. And I think it kind of started a trend with the last World Baseball Classic when Italy was doing things like that, when Israel was doing things like that. But now I think it's permeated to even all those lower level teams that they're really just having fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of to play off of these different nations and their different levels of, you know, involvement, we were alluding to this earlier about the U.S. not having maybe that national pride that a lot of these other teams have. And I think the reasons for that are that there's a very stark monetary incentive on making sure certain guys are safe for the major league season. And Major League Baseball is a huge influence on what the USA roster is going to do, given that the concentration of their rosters is heavily American.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think – what are some reasons that you think for different nations why, like, they get so into it? Because I have my own theories, and I'll start with one. I'm looking here. You have, you know, Venezuela, to an extent, the Netherlands, Panama, Dominican Republic, Cuba. These are, I'm gonna feel stupid if I mess this up. These are all teams that participate in the Caribbean series at the end of winter baseball. And when I thought, I was like, it makes sense to have a national pride when your champion, you know, in your winter league, your big league, domestic league, goes on to play teams from other nations, and the winner is, you know, the champion of the Caribbean. There's a national pride in that, in some sense. You know, obviously, you know, especially, you know, in the Dominican winter league, there's just heavy rivalries. But I just thought kind of that aspect of kind of like a region, a world like region coming together for like a tournament, determine the best team in that region, kind of permeates over into, you know, international events. And how is anybody familiar kind of with Japan and Korea in terms of kind of their international baseball history?
I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, I had the opportunity to play with or rather be on staff with we brought in Riku Nishida, who was a player from Japan, and the way that he kind of went about baseball in general, it was so kind of there was so much ritualistic nature to it, and I'm sure you guys have probably seen his like his wood bat home run at Oregon and some of the crazy stuff that he does. But it was almost, and I know Danny's seen it play too. You know, I think that with the different cultures, the way that they treat the sport has a lot more kind of a lot more rituals, a lot more kind of different things associated with it than simply the game. And so I've always loved that about whether it's playing with, you know, kids from the DR, playing with kids from you know, Asian countries, Korea, Japan. It's really interesting to see.
Yeah, and I was bringing that up to kind of translate into that, especially for Japan, but there's obviously the same level of pride with Korea and to this extent the Chinese Taipei. These countries are very protective of their domestic talent, because they're very conscious of the fact that if these guys just if we just lose our best guys every year to Major League Baseball when they'll just bring in their international scouts, there's protections within their bylaws to really heavily penalize players that enter the that enter the international free agent market without entering the and then signing a contract out of their domestic draft. And combined with that, especially in Japan, I remember watching the World Baseball, the WBSC tournament during the pandemic, when USA was sending over. USA had a rule where they could only send over players that were off of 40-man rosters. Mm-hmm. Or were not on active rosters. Which, in comparison, Japan was sending over the all-star team, Samurai Japan. Like, the institution of that country in terms of international baseball. You know? You know, Masataki Yoshida, Tetsuya Yamada. Gosh, who else? Yamamoto, I think Seiya Suzuki even, like these, you're talking, you know, the best of the best from the NPB. Like it would be the equivalent of sending over that US lineup that's in the World Baseball Classic, Mike Trout and all that. So they just, and I think there's a certain level of, we want to send our best players over and put our best product on the field because we want to be the champions of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get to participate in the World Series, but we can participate is an international competition.
I agree with you. And then just to build off that point, I think that's why other countries, they do have a lot more pride in these teams than USA does, because Major League Baseball flows through the United States. We comprise the United States players will comprise most of the league, right? And in a month, we start that league. And that's what most of these players are looking forward to. But this is a chance for these countries to show that, look, we can now compete with the USA. We can be better than you and beat you. Like, Japan, it means a lot to them if they win this championship. You were talking about how they're protecting their players from going over. And I think the rules around, like, 25 are in place, a lot of those penalties to be posted. And I think if Japan wins, it shows, like, yeah, see, we're on par with them. This is why we want you to build the MPB up before you transfer over, and you're going to play with just as good as talent. And I think Major League Baseball for the U.S., it's just kind of hard to get in that mindset when in a month we're starting that journey to the World Series, right? That's more important for these players than winning the World Baseball Classic, a lot of them.
Yeah, and, you know, we kind of alluded to, with all due respect to Nick Martinez, you know, when you see, you know, Samurai Japan putting Shohei Ohtani on the mound, when you see Team Venezuela putting Pablo Lopez on the mound, think of, you know, the litany of great pitching that qualify on this American team. And Nick Martinez is the second starter. No disrespect to Nick Martinez, but it's just the reality of the situation in terms of these insurance premiums that are being placed on these players, the, you know, very, very, very cautious approach to allowing these players to pitch innings in a competitive setting in the middle of their spring training. It's just it that's going to always affect your investment into it as an American fan. And I'm not criticizing or, you know, saying one thing's better than another, or, you know, that you don't care about this. But there's certain things that it's fun to kind of that I think it's important to kind of, like, sit down and analyze and understand why things are the way they are. Because, I mean, it is a stark difference to what that World Baseball Classic was even just, you know, 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I think one of my favorite storylines was seeing, like, the Czech pitcher who wasn't even getting up over 79 miles an hour, a strikeout, Ohtani. I always thought that was funny, and that kind of sparked a debate within our team where we're going, all right, we all throw, you know, significantly harder than that. you give us 30 at bats against like a team like that, you know, how do we fare, you know? And I think that was kind of a funny thing that we were all talking about, or like, you know, this guy who I think was a plumber or some, you know, some sort of blue collar work, was a, you know, former pitcher himself and was able to do something like that. And, you know, for the rest of his life, you know, probably have that memory of being able to say he got, you know, probably, a, you know, I don't want to, you know, jump the gun, but an all-time great out, you know, is something, you know, especially striking him out. I mean, that's a great, great story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And with that Sheck team, we kind of talk about how it felt like, you know, some of these teams, to a certain extent, there's obvious exceptions, like Great Britain and Italy kind of stick out as kind of these, you know, these mercenary teams, where it's just, you know, guys that are being brought in that have some sort of connection with it to field the best possible team, just because there isn't the depth of talent nationally. And one thing I actually did want to discuss, especially in relation to those countries, and another one, and to a certain extent, China as well. I remember seeing something today of the elementary school where the kid had the Harry Ford cut out on his face, and they introduced him as Sir Harry Ford, and the class is all applauding, and he walked in with his, like, you know, wiffle ball bat, and it just made me think. I was like, I never would have, like, thought, like, I have a, maybe it was just, you know, very cynical of me, but I was like, there's no way this is going to catch on in England. No way. There's a football crazy country, a soccer crazy country, to be more specific. You know, rugby, cricket, you know, tennis, golf, even basketball. Like, maybe even American football before baseball. It's not something I thought of as being, you know, but there's obviously fans there. You see, like, there's mm-hmm. many fan accounts on Twitter. It feels like kind of a subsection of that sporting community. Do you think that these teams are actually going to increase the, like, the appeal of a sport like baseball that really is way down on the pecking order relative to some of these other countries, you know, like America, Japan, Korea, Canada, Dominican Republic, you know, all your Caribbean countries, mm-hmm. in addition, Mexico, where baseball is at a much higher level of pecking order? Do you think that this World Baseball Classic is going to raise the profile in nations like Britain and Italy?
I think it will 100% raise the profile. So let's look at England in particularly. Drew Spencer is their manager, and he was talking during the game about it, and he said how much it would matter for to be on TV and to show that Great Britain can compete with these teams, and how a lot of kids will be watching that. And Major League Baseball, beyond just the World Baseball Classic, has started to take steps. They're going to have the London Series this year with the Cubs and Cardinals are playing a game there. And so will it ever be the biggest sport? Obviously, no. But you say it's probably below football right now. But why is football, American football, why is American football above it right now? Because they've been having the London games for a few years. So now you're seeing a World Baseball Classic team of people from Great Britain through some connection playing. You're never going to see a football team made of Great Britain players play against a U.S. football team, but you can now see a Great Britain baseball team on the same field as the USA baseball team. That is going to show kids, you know what, baseball may be a path where I can go play it. I know they'll be saying that before American football, because right now you're seeing those kids, you're seeing the Great Britain on that same field as Mike Trout, and you're not going to see Great Britain on the same field as a Patrick Mahomes right now.
So that's a very good point. I didn't think about it like that. And like, another thing I was wondering is how deep the connection was going to be between kids and, you know, say some kid in Brighton watching Harry Ford. Is the connection going to be there? But that's nothing I can really answer, and something any of us mm-hmm. can really answer.
No.
But I do think, you know, there you can see it connected. You can see it connected with those kids in that classroom, that they're excited about it. Harry Ford's from Marietta, Georgia. If Harry Ford's been to England, I'm not aware of it. It could have happened on vacation, maybe. But, like, he's from Marietta, Georgia. He's a Georgia kid. And they have that connection to him because he's wearing that Great Britain on his shirt. And he hits bombs. He's been hitting bombs all tournament.
I think, you know, and this is kind of, you know, off topic of that exactly, but, you know, an underrated thing about having the smaller countries in this is that you can take a kid who's a, you know, a single A arm who, you know, probably doesn't have the best chance of turning into a big league guy, and they can go out there on the, you know, worldwide level, and you can put them in front of some of the best hitters in the world, you know, and that's what I love. I mean, Mitch Bratt, he's yeah. obviously a big league prospect. I mean, if you look at his stuff, he's thrown, you know, almost 100 innings, and you know, a sub 2.5 ERA. Okay, this, you know, obviously this kid's going to be special. He struggled last night, you know, relatively so. But you know, if you give that kid that opportunity, you give another 19-year-old, you know, single A kid an opportunity for a smaller country, you know, what you're doing is giving them the opportunity to showcase. Okay, I really am at that level, and I, you know, it's a part of the game, and I hope that, you know, a kid like Brad doesn't get on himself too much about that, you know. And, you know, I definitely think that that's been a really cool thing to watch, is like having, okay, here's a double A arm, you know, out here against this sort of lineup, you know, whether it's the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, you know, Puerto Rico, you know, from there. So,
okay. I wanted to throw this one specifically to Johnny, because I think Johnny will have the best answer for this question. But it's been something I've been thinking about ever since the tournament started, particularly in relation, you know, American, you know, I'm always thinking about how America's involved in things. The lack of arms that are available due to the fact that we're in the throes of spring training and people are ramping up, and they do not want to take the risk of somebody blowing an arm out, and it would just be a disaster. Do you think that March is the best month to hold this event regardless? Or is it even the only month you can hold this event? Or are there other months you see, you know, outside of, you know, your typical spring seasons across the world, you know, like maybe going into mid to late November? This is just like something I've been thinking about, but I don't really have the answer, because I don't have that insight of, you know, going through a full season, going through an off season, what your arm care is like, what you can and can't do. It's an imperfect question. There's never going to be a perfect answer, but do you think March is the best month, or do you even see any other months as being a possibility?
So, yeah, so, you know, in a lot of respects, they are right. I mean, early on does provide the highest chance of injury. The what's becoming clear through the, you know, medical literature is that, you know, injuries in, I'd say, the majority of the time can be represented from the relationship between acute and chronic workload, meaning acute is what you do in a day and chronic is what you've done in the last 30, 60, 90, whatever days, so be it. So if we look at stuff like, okay, you know, with most of these big leaguers, they probably started some sort of plyometric throwing probably right around Christmas. I know there's some guys who throw year round. I know guys like Scherzer, guys like Bauer. Those are guys who are always throwing. And then, you know, you have your normal guys, and I've been around like places like, you know, Cressy and, you know, Tread Athletics and different places where you see guys when they like to shut down, when they start to ramp up. And I'd say you're kind of hitting your sweet spot so that you're ready for live batters right around that time you get down to pitcher catcher. So that's mid February. I don't see a real issue with what the first round is 65. I would say that if you want to do it in a healthy manner, you'd probably cap most of it around 80. So I saw the last round is going to be around 95. Again, it's completely contextual on whatever that guy's done at that point. So if this is a guy who's been completely ramped up from early February, I see no issue. If you wanted to do it maybe on the back end, I guess it would be tough for guys like, okay, you just finished this, you know, grueling year where you threw 120 innings, you know, of, you know, wherever. I mean, give whatever number, you know, do you want to do it at that point? And I guess that's kind of the question. So I don't have an issue with it, especially if the right mechanisms are in place where you're tracking where guys are at workload wise. But, you know, that's going to kind of, you know, come down to for what it comes down to. And I think that's why teams don't want them, you know, there. you know, because basically we're at a level now with tracking where it's like, if, you know, if a guy farts, they're putting in a tracking system, you know, and I think that teams don't want to send guys out, you know, outside of their scope. And want to keep guys, okay, at their facility, want to keep him in the complex, want to keep him pitching with us so we can track all sorts of stuff going into their season.
Yeah. Danny, you have anything you want to add? Like, the one thing I was thinking of is just kind of like when I said it and I thought about it, I was like, it's just going to turn into the Pro Bowl. If you do it in November, like I was like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, I personally just thought there'd be possibly even less arms because – you're going to hit your innings limits, right? Like, who to say that Nick Martinez will even have innings to throw after, especially if the Padres make a playoff run too, is he going to go pitch in after the playoffs? Probably not.
Yeah. I don't think there's ever going to be a perfect answer. And I'm starting to like come to the conclusion that just given the amount of investment, given the amount of tracking, as Johnny alluded to, it's just, this is, it sucks, but it's probably gonna be a new normal. You know, they're gonna try to think of ways to work around it, but you know, there, no matter what, if it's any month during, you know, really just any time outside of competitive major league innings and postseason innings, throwing in a competitive environment is going to be a minefield to navigate to get pitchers on these rosters. I just hope for the sake of just, you know, having the best players on the field, it doesn't permutate really far down to the other teams as well. But and one other thing I wanted to touch on before we get to our final question. You know, watching the World Baseball Classic, something jarred me when I was watching it. And I felt like, oh my gosh, this is like already it's jarring me. The shifts. They're playing shifts. And I was like, what? Oh, yeah, you can still do that in professional. Like, this is like the only place you're ever going to see Freddie Freeman get shifted on for the next 10 years. Like, and they don't.
The pitch clock, yeah.
There's no pitch clock. That was the other one I was going to get to. Does it already feel just like watching this is like this is weird, man. And we've just been like, what, 3 weeks into spring training, or 4 weeks into spring training games with these pitch clocks and the shift rules? Is it already weird to watch this stuff?
I'll say I think it's weirder now watching without a pitch clock since there's a pitch clock in D1 college that's loosely enforced. And but the spring training ones, I would say shift not as much just because I am mostly watching college games and you can still shift if you want there. But I do think it's made me happier that there is a pitch clock. Seeing it in conjunction with spring training games, seeing that there are spring training games ending by the it was the Canada-Great Britain game. I think it was like 2 hours into the fourth inning and that there's been spring training games over by then. And especially that game started later, so I wish that could have gone a little faster. But I will say the one thing is watching it and seeing the flow of the game, seeing the batters and hitters kind of like being in those mind games makes me hope that there's a tweak to the pitch clock, that maybe we add like 5 seconds onto it. It seemed a little rushed so far watching the pitch clock in major league level. Maybe add 5 seconds, 20 seconds is still below what the average was in the past, would speed things up. But that's something I think Major League Baseball will continue to look into. It's year one. There'll be changes to come. I think generally I'm good with the pitch clock, but could see some tweaks down the road to maybe more mimic what I'm seeing. But it kind of does look like two different games with one having the pitch clock and one where you're having a pitcher take 30 seconds before he even takes a sign.
Yeah, it felt kind of, you know, different to me. Johnny, what are your kind of thoughts on watching – World Baseball Classic, kind of with just, you know, what baseball was like in the major league level in the previous year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the shift's going to be interesting because I think that they are going to find a way around it. I mean, like we've already seen teams doing some wacky outfield formations to fit certain guys. And I think that's going to probably be the norm just because, you know, we're seeing that, you know, certain guys have certain – you know, exploitable, you know, movements in their swing where it's like, okay, if we know we can dial this in, you know, there's a large probability that we're not going to be seeing balls this in this area. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing is like, I don't think the shift is gone completely. I think there'll always be some iteration, some form of it, you know? And like I said, whether it's just, you know, where it's implemented now where the guys have to stay in the dirt, and then you can kind of manipulate the outfield position a little bit. And then the pitch clock is, that's a weird one. I think that I'm all for guys moving quicker, but I think that right now, the MLB has done an incredibly poor job of making the rules, known for the pitcher and the hitter. I mean, we're seeing guys in the box ready to go. Hitters, you know, saying let's go and then being called out on some sort of, you know, weird violation. And it's like, it's not, and even the pitchers are scratching their head right now. It's like, what, you know, we just want clear rules. And I think that, like, we've had certain guys called out for things in college even this year where it's like, can we get some sort of, you know, agreement on what is what, you know, and kind of work from there.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen some hitters getting called out in college this year, and they're just like, oh, what happened? And I think it's going to be an adjustment period. You know, I think about the shot clock, and I'm like, man, I can't imagine what it was like to deal with the shot clock for the first time when you've been playing possessions for a minute long at a time, where you're just running out 90 seconds of the clock, passing in and out, and eating up time. That was an offense back then. It'd be like 40 to 38 ball games. It was just like crazy. So it's just an adjustment. But the rigid implementation of something that hasn't been properly explained has led to moments like that so far.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the World Baseball Classic. Does anybody else have any additional insights? And I mean, if you want to talk more about the pitch clock too.
I wanted to really quick give a shout out to, a kid on Twitter who I know that some of you guys have been following the work that I do with stuff modeling, whether it's, you know, expected whiff or expected run value. And there is a kid who I follow. He followed me a few months ago, who is posting his own expected run value for the World Baseball Classic. His name's Justin Chen. That's at Justin Chen, Justin Chen, Chen, and he's posting full stuff models for the World Baseball Classic. Looks like he's a student manager at Northeastern School in Boston. So if you're interested in that, check him out on Twitter. I think that's a pretty cool resource. It's somebody who's going into the pitch level data for the World Baseball Classic. And yeah, so I just wanted to make sure that you guys, everyone on here listening, was aware of that.
All right. So I'll throw it to our final question, which I've deliberately obscured because I didn't want anybody to cheat. Because I know how you guys are. This is for you, Danny, and for you, Johnny. And I'll start with Danny. Name me one player on the Czech Republic World Baseball Classic team. I need the name.
I know there's a D2 guy that plays middle infield, hit the ball pretty hard. Something with an M. I know that's like MA something. Don't know the full name, though. Can't give you that.
All right. Johnny, you got a chance to steal.
Yeah, I'll give you Georgia Tech commit, right-handed pitcher, low to mid 90s, Combine Academy kid. That's what I can give you. I know he's pitching for Czech, some pretty electric stuff. That's all I got.
All right, I'll loosen it up and say there is one former major leaguer on this roster.
Really?
Yeah.
What team did he play for?
Played for the A's, Brewers. Those are the two
and
most
position, notable. And position, teams. If you can give us that.
Utility man.
Utility.
Oh, Eric Sogard?
Eric Sogard. There we go. Yeah. And to clarify, I wanted to get back to this. You're thinking Michael Cavallo from Combine Academy.
I am, yeah, yeah.
And you're thinking of Merrick Kloop from North Greenville.
Was I think he's an outfielder. He was a North Carolina State transfer, as you pointed out. And Voltage Minchak is on that team. But I just thought that was a fun little thing to end on, because it's just like there's some of these teams where we get excited about it, and then it's just like in one year out of the other. Yeah, because when you have a team like that, you know, representing a country like the Czech Republic, there's not really that many connections to get, you know, all these prospects and former players on your team. But I wanted to get Marek Kloop, because one thing I noticed, he was the guy that barreled up Roki Sasaki. 102 miles per hour fastball, 100 out the bat. To me, when I saw that, I was like, I think for a guy that's at the D2 level, could you have a louder singular data point for your draft case? I barreled up 102 miles per hour.
I got a premier pitcher in the MPB.
Yeah. Well, 109 off the bat. Pulled it. He pulled it.
I'll give you one case really quick. We had a kid here who spent 4 years at the Division II level, and he ended up grad transferring to Northeastern. And they played they do this weird thing where they played the Red Sox last week in their spring training. And he threw two and two thirds against the Red Sox. Ended up getting out Devers, striking out a few guys. I think Duran was in that bit. But it's like immediately when I saw that the middle infield on check, I was thinking of that. It's like, is there like a cooler way to show that you can ball with the big boys than like doing something like that? And because that's when we were watching our buddy pitch against the Red Sox, you're like, no way, he just got Devers to pop out. It's like, okay, now it's like that's his way of saying, yeah, I'm here. Like all these scouts who said, yeah, I'm a D2 kid. Look what I just did. You know, this is, you guys just paid this guy however much money you paid him, and I'm a Division II guy, and I just got him to pop out. You know, or I just hit a double off 102 miles an hour. So I will say that's like kind of what we were thinking.
Yeah, I just thought that was really cool. Marek Kloop, you know, he was actually kind of somebody that I was a little familiar with, just because I'm a fiend. I'm always trying to learn about players that have tools that are interesting. He was in the D2 Classic at the beginning of the year at Houston, so we have data on him. 111 miles per hour off the bat's his max. Like, you know, he's 24 years old. Like, you know, or he's going to be 24 years old at draft. So it's, you know. But just like, it's definitely something I'm going to have in the back of my mind. And whenever I have a conversation with people, I'll be like, so what if I told you a guy hit 102 miles per hour, pulled it 109 off the bat? Where would you start money wise? It's just that popped in my mind when I saw it as a hypothetical. And it's just like, yeah, this World Baseball Classic provides moments to show what you can do. Highest level. And like, you know, sometimes it's Mitch Bratt going, you know, a third of an inning and showing how hard it is to get the best of the best major league hitters out. And sometimes it's Marek Kloop barreling up 102 mile per hour fastball. You know, it's, you know, these moments can, you know, I would say make or break, but there's moments that can really put you on the map for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to close it up here. So I'm just going to, you know, go through our spiel at the end. Danny, what are you looking forward to over the next, you know, say, you know, 2-3 weeks? We don't even have a recording schedule anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, so I will say something I'm looking forward to is winning your amount of money for this episode when UVA covers
against Carolina
on Thursday. For the listeners, Will and I have a little friendly bet going. We're putting our pay for this episode on. So I go to UVA, which has been said. Will is a fan of Furman.
No, I'm a grad. I'm an alum.
Oh, a grad. Okay.
2013. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, see, I thought it was more about the Clemson hate because Clemson dropped the last two games.
I'm a Furman alum.
Yeah,
and that's what I was like, oh, my God, I have to watch Virginia again.
Yeah. So, well, on Thursday, UVA is a 6.5-point favorite over Furman, and I will be taking UVA. Will be taking Furman, and we'll be betting this episode's money on it. I will say, though, as much as I like, UVA's basketball has been disappointing to me recently. My hope is that they slow the game down enough that they can just control it as UVA tends to. But I'm excited. This is my last year with March Madness here. The only other time we were March Madness, during my time here, Ohio beat us in the first round. My brother graduated my freshman year, so he was here when they won the championship. I just want to see a win. That's been what I've been hoping for 4 years. See one win in the tournament. Thursday at noon, going to be with my friends. Should be really fun if we win. So excited for that.
Yeah, and I'll give you and to be fair, because it's a sporting bet between you know respectful parties. During the episode, I was going to go see what the line was, and the line across is 5.5. So we'll do it five and a half.
Yeah. That makes me
I don't want you making any excuses when Furman loses by 5 points.
Yeah, we'll run 5 or 6 points. Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Furman has been bridesmaid, never the pride in the SoCon for years now. Like, they've had big non-conference wins seemingly every year. They seem like in the Bob Ritchie era, you know, rising coach. I think he's going to be a head coach somewhere other than Furman next year. That just says that's just a testament to how good he's been at Furman. But always one or two seed, maybe three seed. They make it to the semifinals. Last year they lost in a buzzer beater to Chattanooga in the championship, and it was brutal. I watched it. And I was like, oh my god. But they avenged those demons, and now they get Virginia 12:40 Thursday. I'll be watching. Daisy watching. And we're just gonna have a friendly wager on it, and that's that. You looking forward to anything, Johnny?
nothing as exciting. We've got a weekend series down at University of Bridgeport, which is a out of conference series. Should be good. They've done all right so far. You know, we like I said, we're still trying to find ourselves as a team, and we just got like about 10 inches of snow up here. So classes were canceled today. You'll kind of see about tomorrow and go from there. I mean, it's a typical, you know, northeast weather where it's like we left for Florida and figured when we come back we're still going to be inside, and you know, we're still practicing inside and right now, and you know, we're waiting to get outside full time. So
okay, this has technically already happened, but I think it's something different to talk about in terms of things we're excited for. What I'm excited for every year when it comes around this time is, it's usually, I think it's the second Sunday in March, clocks move forward an hour. I look forward to it so much every year. I hate standard time. We've moved past the fact, like the point of like, oh, you know, farmers, you know, like need to have the light, needs to be light at like 6:30 in the morning. We move past that. We're a different society now. It seems like everybody's overwhelmingly in favor of having more daylight during the daytime. I'm just super excited because I think it plays a lot with seasonal depression for people. I know for me, it's something that I'll struggle with. I feel down every winter because it gets darker and it's colder. It's still a little cold right now down here. And it's gonna be colder the further you get up. But that extra hour of sunlight at the end of the day is gonna do wonders for me. I always look forward to it every year, so I wanted to shout that out. shout out daylight savings time. And of course, I'm looking forward to winning an episode's worth of pay on Thursday, but that's another thing. All right. So I just want to thank Danny. I want to thank Johnny for being here for this episode. We got a nice, you know, chunky 1 hour episode here, near like 57 minutes. I mean, honestly, we've been kind of, you know, backed up a bit of weeks, you know, like schedules have been kind of hard to fit in. So I really wanted to get a nice, you know, hefty episode, you know, full of content. And I felt like we had a really great discussion about a bunch of different things, a bunch of great insight. So I want to thank Danny and Johnny again, I guess, for being here and talking baseball and talking all sorts of other things. And of course, anybody who's listening out there, thank you for listening. We'll be back. Plan is 2 weeks time, but you know, things change. But the plan, you know, we'll try to get in together at the end of March and look forward to the month of April. So thank you all for listening, and until then, keep grinding.